It's 7:40 on a Thursday morning with the Musers. Coming up in 15 minutes, the shocking sale announced yesterday of the Lakers. And we'll also get into the ever-increasing valuations of pro sports franchises, including the latest estimate on what the Cowboys are worth. That's all coming up at 7:55. And then we'll check in with Cowboys at training camp in Oxnard. Joseph Hoyt, our ranch reporter from the Dallas Morning News, will join us to talk about that scrimmage 2 days ago with the Rams, and we'll look ahead to preseason game number one this weekend with Seattle. Right now, time for another book review. This is my August book review, and I'm doing a pretty good job. I'm actually a little ahead of schedule, trying to read a book a month. That's about all I've got time for. I am almost finished, though, with my September book of the month, and I'll review that maybe next week. So I'm ahead of pace. The book that I just finished, though, two nights ago, many P1s may be familiar with this, and I referenced it last week when we were having a discussion about children. And it's a book called London Falling. It is a New York Times bestseller by Patrick Radden Keefe. He is the author of Say Nothing. I did not read that book, but I watched that TV series on Hulu. And that is about the two sisters growing up in Belfast in the 70s and 80s during the Troubles. Mm-hmm. And it was a great series, and I hear the book is spectacular. Well, London Falling is also spectacular. London Falling, A Mysterious Death in a Gilded City and a Family's Search for the Truth. And this, I would say, is the second best book that I've read this year. I still think The Gales of November, the Edmund Fitzgerald story, is the best book I've read. But of the eight, almost nine books now I've read this year, this was the other page turner.
Okay.
I couldn't wait to read Gales of November every night. I could not wait to read London Falling every night. A true page turner. And I've read some really good books this year, but man, when you get into a page-turner, it's so thrilling. I mean, you want to spend every moment of your day finding out what's next. And this book is, it's a very sad story, but it's the story of the Brettler family. They live in London, Matthew and Rachel, and their two sons, Joe and Zach. And it starts, and I'm not going to tell much of the story because it's a true crime story. It's nonfiction. Everything happened. And it starts with the tale of the fall of the Soviet Union and the Russian oligarchs fleeing, going somewhere else to live a good life. And London ended up being the destination in the last 20 years, in particular, of a lot of the oligarchy. They just found life to be really sweet in London, and part of that reason is because London welcomed them with open arms. They didn't care about their background, the shady ways in which they got their money. They just thought, wow, this money is going to be pumped into our economy.
Yeah, bring your money.
So let's make life good for the oligarchy. And so with that came all of these shady people and shady business practices and a lot of people who were feasting off of the oligarchy and those shady business practices. So then you fast forward to the story of the Brettler family, a very normal family, a Jewish family, and their ancestors, most of which on both sides were lost during World War II in the concentration camps. Mm. So each family had just a couple survivors make it out. So they're used to tragedy in their family. But the two boys are pretty normal. Joe, the oldest, was very easy to raise. Zach, the youngest, was a little more problematic. He couldn't get into the good schools that Joe got into, but he eventually found his way into this good school and a boarding school. But Zach always had an imagination. And once he got into high school and he goes away to this boarding school, and again, I'm just telling you everything that you learn in the early part of this book. I'm not really giving anything away, including the main point of the book, which we'll get to. Once he gets into high school, the fantastical part of his mind takes over, and he becomes obsessed with, because he is going to school with someone who's from the family of a Russian oligarch, and he can't believe the cars that they drive and the house that they live in and just that world, and he becomes obsessed with the world of the oligarchy, and that's what he wants. So he doesn't even really want to go to school. He just wants to start getting into business. And if it's shady and nefarious, that's fine with him. Well, fast forward another couple of years, and he has constructed this web of lies, and he has told everybody in these London underground circles that he is the son of a Russian oligarch, that his mother lives in South America or something, and his father is an oligarch who, and I think he eventually says he passed away, and so he is a 19-year-old that has inherited billions. And so these predators feast on him. Two in particular, one of them is a businessman from India, I think it was, or Pakistan, and he befriends him. He takes him under his wing because he wants some of that money. The other is a mobster living in London, who is also from Southeast Asia, and he feasts on these oligarchs' children, you know, because they're easy prey. Mm-hmm. Well, at some point, these two discover that this kid is lying.
He's just Chris-Chrising his way through life.
I thought of Chris-Chris this entire book because of these stories that this kid would tell these people. And you learn this immediately in chapter one. At age 19, Zach jumps from the balcony of this highfalutin residential tower in London into the River Thames, and he's dead. And so the mystery that they try to unravel in this book, and the parents are trying to unravel this, Scotland Yard is trying to unravel this, the author is trying to unravel this, friends and family are trying to unravel this. Did he commit suicide?
Take his own life.
Or was he murdered? And they discover surveillance video, because there are cameras all over London that help them try to piece this together.
See, surveillance cameras work, Gordo.
See there? So we have to have them now.
They discover stories about their son that they had no idea about. There's just so much that goes into trying to put this puzzle together. And at the end of the story, the author does come to a conclusion that I agree with. I believe it's the logical conclusion of what happened, and I won't give that away. But there are so many great tentacles from this story. One of them that we kind of talked about last week, the difficulty and the crapshoot of raising a child. Their older child, great. No problems. Great schools. Great student. The younger child, same DNA. Pretty much the same way that the older son was raised, but he ended up in this situation, in this predicament. And you just never know.
Never know.
It's such a crapshoot. And I was also reminded throughout this book of what my mom used to always say. Whenever I would ask her if she worried about me, when I was a kid or a young adult, and she always said no, because you had nice friends.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, she had the natural parental worry, but she said, I never really worried about you because you had nice friends. And as a parent, that's my biggest concern, is that my daughter falls in with bad friends.
Because almost at some particular age, that's practically everything.
Yeah,
it's around 13, they fall in and have some bad friends. You can't pry them away from them. You can't choose their friends for them. You can try to influence them.
You really have no call on that.
And, yeah, it can get them in all sorts of trouble that they then have to be reacting to that trouble for the rest of their life. Decisions they made then, things they did that traumatized them then.
And those friends will have more sway over that child than their parents in most cases.
By far. Yeah.
Because of that peer pressure.
That's part of natural growing up.
Yeah.
You divorce yourself from your parents, and then your friends become the most important thing.
So you will struggle with these parents as they try to figure out where they went wrong. Was it their fault? I mean, they rehash everything. The other thing, and there are many things that jump out about this book, but one of them is, the seediness around you. Like, these parents never realized what was going on in London around them until they were exposed to this crazy, seedy world. And it was very eye-opening and, you know, had them thinking, man, maybe we need to move out of London and move to a small town and just get away from this because it's in our neighborhood. It's all around us. It's our neighbors. And you just never know.
No.
So it's a great,
what's the name of it again?
Great book. It's called London Falling by Patrick Radden Keefe. It's a New York Times bestseller, and it's the second best book I've read this year. It's a page turner. It's fantastic.
Interesting. All right.
And by the way, I posted on Twitter the list of all of the books that I've read so far this year if you want to keep up. And at the urging of Bob Sturm, I'm also on Goodreads. But when I was filling in all the books that I've read over the last 5 or 7 years, I didn't really do them in proper order, so my list of books might be confusing to you. There's some that I read 8 years ago that popped up yesterday, but I've at least listed most of them on there.
And this is your second favorite book this year, behind second Bedford favorite. Falling, which was more of a local story.
Yeah, Bedford Falling.
More local intrigue.